Hey everybody, welcome to Season 2, Episode 20 of The Hard Truth, Inside the Football Industry Podcast, with me, Philip Eidson, and Darren McAnthony, Chairman and Co-Owner of English Championship side Peterborough United. And we're just back from a couple of weeks off for Christmas, and what a strange Christmas break it's been. How was yours, Darren?
Yeah, listen, it was great with the family. Unfortunately, everyone got COVID, as is everyone else, with the Omicron. You know, my kids tested. We only went out once the whole time before Christmas. Wore masks, did all the usual, and my daughter still got it. So she got it, then my son got it, and then obviously on the final day, they were all fine. I suddenly got it. So, but thank the Lord, nothing. I didn't even have a cough or a sniffle, but I was tested positive for 8 days in a row. And then 2 days before the game on Saturday, I was negative. So negative for a few days. Bosh, out we go. I think it's the end of the pandemic now. Everyone's going to have this fucker by the end, including you've had it, obviously. And
yeah,
you know, and you're. I said earlier, you've got more vaccine in you than most of Australia.
You know, we've got more vaccine. Been, you know, lots of taking care and still wearing masks outside for the most part. You know, in crowds, and we still got it. Like you said, everyone's going to get this, unfortunately. So it's just inevitable.
Listen, football wise, all the games off, so we never got to. You know, I've seen one game. I think that was the home game against, who do we beat? I'm fucking forgetting now. Millwall. And the rest of the games were pretty much off bar Blackpool away. So, you know, it was good to be back for the FA Cup on Saturday. Good win. Should have been 10. I don't know why I even look at social media after games or read local journalists' opinions, but it's like it brings you down. You know what I mean? It kind of brought me down on Saturday night. I mean, yeah, Sammy Schmoddock's played blindfolded. God bless him. I love him to bits. But, I mean, he's missed, I think, 6 one-on-ones. If we hadn't won that game, I'd probably have him assassinated. You know what I mean? And I'm saying that jovial because I love Sammy. But we created, I mean, I've never seen so many chances. I mean, and people are going on about, well, you know, you need this, you need striker, and the team wouldn't do well in League One. Well, here's the difference. If you're in League One and you're flying at the top and you're winning, you know, we'd have scored 12 goals on Saturday. You're in form. Everyone's happy. Everyone's flying. The confidence is flowing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You don't even think about it.
You don't even think about it. You know what I mean? So everyone's trying to make a connection. Oh, God almighty, the team can't do it to a team in League Two. And how are they going to fare in the champ? It's any given game. You know, the last home game before, we beat a really good Millwall team. The Millwall team that nearly beat Palace on Saturday. So, you know, the positive was our football was good. We created a hell of a lot of chances. We dominated them. We made a stupid goalkeeping error that gave a penalty away. And then because we hadn't put them away, it got nervous the last 5 minutes. But apart from that, they'd fuck all chances, you know what I mean? And, you know, I think Swanee was talking about the goal that was disallowed. Look, we won the football game. It's a cup game. After Chorley fucking knocked us out last year, you know, I was happy that we won the football game. But it was just good to see. I like to forget chances, forget about goals scored. I like to see chances created. And we are creating a lot of chances. And I think, you know, we'll get our act together converting, you know. And if we do that, we have a hell of a chance to do very well in 2022. And with players like Randall, Ricky J. Jones, Marriott's back in 2 weeks' time, Pocu unfortunately got COVID and he's been flying. Those four players, I think, are going to play a big part in what we do in the second half of the season. So, touching wood, we stay fit and we make a couple of signings. You know, obviously the Norwich boy came in, did phenomenal. I'm told he's a right back, but he played left back and fucking was absolutely brilliant.
And what a goal he scored as well.
Yeah, great. You know what? I like him. He's a great lad. Great character. You saw in a celebration. You know, he's full of confidence. He linked up well. You know, it was him, Dembele, Sammy. They just linked down that side and it looked good. And, you know, we always said it. We can get a couple of fullbacks, you know, and maybe another striker because, you know, we're playing a diamond really well. But with a diamond, your fullbacks really, really need to do that business in the second. You know, they need to be making goals and scoring goals like this kid did on Saturday. And, you know, and we need to be putting them away. So, and I think we will. So if we make those right signings and the right deals, and I'm working hard on it. You know, and it's tough. January is really tough. I said it last night. You know, Christ, I'm. You know, it's difficult because it's the expectations, it's the demands, it's the lack of availability of Premier League clubs letting players out. You know, we have a couple of deals done, and we're waiting on a club with COVID and. You know, what's going to happen with postponements? And it could be a week, it could be 2 weeks. And Jesus, every day counts. And, you know, another deal we'd done, we were waiting on that club to go and sign a player. And then there was an issue with the club they were signing a player from due to COVID. It's just like that. And then it's also dealing with clubs. You know, you can't buy players in January. It's impossible. There's no money around, but no one wants to sell players, amazingly enough, which is like a paradox. And trying to find a good striker. I know everyone wants that 20-goal-a-season striker. Well, you know, there are clubs in the Championship that pay 10, 15 million for that. You know, 30, 40 grand a week. It's and then even if you have the money, I was saying it the other day, if we agreed to give, say, Newcastle 50 grand a week for Dwight Gale until the end of the season, and let's say me and my partners pull that up and agreed that deal, Dwight Gale ain't coming to us. He's not coming to us because Bournemouth make a phone call, you go there. Fulham make a phone call. West Brom make a phone call. There's 14 clubs before us that he would go to for us. So forget it. And not only that, you know, you bring him in and he hurts himself or he's injured and, you know, you've spent £1 million, you know, on wages. It's just, you know, so it's marrying that up. And then it's like, I don't want to loan players. We like to buy, particularly in attacking areas. But the players you want, they don't want to sell. So it's really, really difficult. And then you're like, well, if you don't sign one more and you need a bit of help in that area, and if someone goes, it's just frustrating. But we'll get through it. And if we can strike gold like we've done with the Norwich boy, and the Norwich boy looks like a prospect, and, you know, if we can strike gold, if we can get 3 of the 4 right, or 4 of the 5 right, because you're not going to get them all right, I think it'll make us a very good Championship team. So, yeah, it is what it is. I'm not negged out. I'm not negative. I know everyone else is. I know lots of people have written us off. I know a lot of our fans, like the press, you know, the lovely tweet and stuff about, well, this team is struggling in League One and da-da-da-da-da and that. I know they love all doing that. That's fine. That's fire. That's fuel. You know, that makes me want to do it even more. You know, and between myself, Baz, and the manager, you know, we're tight. You know, we spoke before the game, after the game, and we know what's ahead. And, you know, I have to try and do my best with limited resources to give the manager a few more tools. And we have to get some of these key players fit. And if we do that, we'll do really well. If we don't do that, we won't. So that's it in a nutshell.
Now, you're an action-oriented person. How do you have patience, you know, waiting for all these deals to fall into place, like, without then going on to the next thing?
Difficult. You know, the Norwich one took a little bit longer, negotiations. You know, I'm very happy in the end that Stuart Webber, you know, he's a tough negotiator. We got there in the end, Baz and him hammered out a deal that went backwards and forwards. We're close. And I don't get excited, particularly when you're loaning players, because someone can pip you to it. You know, in August, we were pipped a couple of times. We had a player in a car en route, and then I think it was West Brom rang them, and they changed the car direction and went there on loan instead. So, you know, I when I'm buying a player, I can get excited because I know the player wants to come. I know there's a deal to be done. I can get the deal done. The player's going to come do the medical. The only thing that will let us down is the medical. When it's a loan, it can be at any second just the rug can be pulled out from under you. So it's kind of one of those things, you know. But look, I'm an eternal optimist. I know I'm getting a lot of flack. I know there's a lot of questions. That's okay. That's fine. You know what I mean? And that's football. This is your job. It's an unpaid job, but it's your job all the same. And
the job you pay to do.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a job I enjoy doing. So I guess I'll give it my all. And I've always said if it's not good enough, well, you know, the rest will take care of itself. But I've just got to try and help and give the manager as many tools as possible. And then the team and the players have to help as well and go out and be better. And a fraction better than they were in the first 23 games where we weren't magnificent. But if we can be a fraction better, you know, we'll have a hell of a second half of the season. So there's a lot to play for. Forget the FA Cup. That's just a distraction. We've got QPR at home. I'm sure they'd agree, not the greatest, sexiest draw in the world. You know, but a chance to get to the fifth round. So I don't worry about that when that comes. Right now, we've got a lot of games stacking up that are coming. And all the focus is on going out and creating chances and converting chances and taking points. So it's big. So forget posh. What about Bradford? I watched the highlights. Not good.
No, it wasn't good on Saturday. So we had our COVID break as well. And then we played against Barrow just over a week ago. You know, pretty abject performance in terms of skill, but, you know, the heart was there. And they're all coming back from COVID. So I thought it was a really good performance. We battled out a win, an away win, first win in a long time. You know, sometimes it doesn't matter how you play, especially, say, when everyone's coming back and, you know, they were probably all winded, you know, a couple of days beforehand, still getting over COVID. Then, you know, you have a week of training, played Carlisle away yesterday. Sorry, not yesterday, on Saturday. It was awful. You know, it was, you know, and the players, well, the fans are starting to turn against the players, you know, singing about not fit to wear the shirt and singing about Derek Adams's football not being particularly pleasing on the eyes, to paraphrase some of the chants that were coming out. So you know, some tough times. And I hate to say that January is so important, because I feel like we're here every year saying, oh, you got to do all these things in January. And you and I have talked about how that's not necessarily a reality. But that's where we are.
January is this, everyone looks at January as this like Hail Mary month.
Right.
It's Hail Mary time to get your promotion up and running. It's Hail Mary to keep you in the league. It's the Hail Mary to change everything. I've been here 15 years. We had one great January a couple of years ago, you know, when we brought Reece Brown in, we brought Smodics in. I think we brought Jack Taylor in. And it was kind of the seeds planted for getting them signed the following summer and then up and running for the promotion, you know. So, but a lot of that work had been done the summer before, funny enough. So we'd gone for those players the summer before, couldn't get them. But then 5 months later, circumstances changed to allow us to get them. 99% of the time in January, you know, it's not what you think it is. And it's not for fans either. Yes, it's the excitement of signing some players. And look, if we don't sign any more players, I'm still as confident that we can stay in the championship as I was back in June and July. I just need three or four of our big players who haven't shown up for the first half of the season to show up. And I know they can. They just haven't for whatever reason. So maybe it's the same for Bradford. You know, you start hanging your hat on, you know, how many signings do you want to make, for example, as a Bradford fan?
Yeah, and I'd probably say you need three or four signings. You know, there's some gaps because we haven't got strength in depth. There's probably a couple of positions that the players that we have just have consistently not performed, and their backups, you know, like round square pegs in round holes. But I mean, the players, I think they have the ability. You know, that's one of the things I kind of struggle with. You know, with the players getting a lot of stick for playing, but my position is, well, if they're playing as well as they can, they're just not good players. That's not the player's fault. So you can't be blaming a player for giving 100% if that's just the level of his ability, because, you know, his football club put him in that position. They bought him, they played him, you know, he's doing the best he can. So I'm sure there's some players in there that are just, you know, at a ceiling, and that ceiling isn't good enough. But there's plenty of players in that squad who I think are underperforming. And that's where the frustration comes in. But also the opportunity, you know they've got it. It's like, I'm sure you've had, you know, through the season, you kind of want to just grab hold of them and shake them. And it's like, what are you doing? Because you've got it inside you. And we've got a lot of players like that just aren't performing.
Yeah, I absolutely. For me, if you told me, I could name four key players for us, that if you'd said to me in the summer, they'd have been a 5 out of 10 in the first half of the season, I'd have called you a liar. And it's a big reason why we're not 12th or 13th in the championship. And does that mean they're not good enough? Bollocks, they are. I know they are. 100% they are, because I've seen other clubs who've come up with players not as good as them doing fucking better. I've been around football a long time. They've just fallen way below their own standards. And for whatever reason, they haven't come to the party. Now, if two or four of them had come to the party, not an issue, we'd be fine. But the fact three to four of them haven't has been a big fucking problem. So, and a couple of them in big attacking areas, which you know, say 70% of our goals and assists would have come from last year. So I need them to wake the fuck up. Do you know what I mean? And snap out of it. Because if they do that, because I know they're good enough. And if they do that, we're a different team, because they were a big part of why we got here. And I had a lot of confidence in them. So it could be the same at Bradford. You're looking at it, your eyes don't tell lies. You're thinking, I've seen this player, he can play. But for whatever reason, collectively, they're dragging themselves down to a standard that shouldn't be acceptable. So, you know, that's football. That's what can happen sometimes when things aren't going to plan. Fans get on you, the media gets on you, owners get on you, whatever, you know, the manager suddenly gets on you. And humans are humans, you know. It's how people are affected by pressure. It's how people respond to pressure. It's how people respond to criticism. You know, I'm that guy that when I'm criticized, I respond in a, fuck you, I'm going to do twice as better.
I'm going to prove you wrong.
Yeah, other people wither and fucking die. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's the question on your character, on your mentality. Are you going to wither? Are you going to thrive? So which camp are you in? Because I'm in the thrive camp. You know what I mean? And that's where you got to get your fucking melons out and show people and ignore all the fucking the white noise and just get on and do your job. So it's going to be interesting. You know, how many players do you think Bradford are going to recruit in January?
I do think that we're going to go out and get some numbers in. I think that Derek Adams has to, because he's made a lot of noise about, you know, these aren't my players. You know, I've got rid of the old head of recruitment. I brought my own scouting staff in. You know, I think that he needs to bring new players. So he will lose that excuse, obviously. Although I would argue whether it's an excuse or not, because
he's doing the club no favors when he says shit like that. You know, when your manager starts talking about, "Oh, I want to bring in my own director of football. I want to do this. They're not my player." You know, stop. Like, you know, in the NFL, they have what's called a front office. The front office is your GM, your manager, the recruitment. They have a whole analytics department, and they're responsible for the draft. They do the free transfer signings, and then the manager is, you know, the coach, the head coach, then does his job. You know, and I was listening to, it was Bruce Arians at Tampa who won last night because I'm a Tom Brady fan. And in fairness, he was giving credit to the front office saying, look, we've had a lot of injuries, but because of our roster, our squad, you know, the front office has done a magnificent job. You know, coaches and managers have to stop with that. The only reason people are doing that is two reasons. One, they think it'll make a difference, or two, they want the sacking to get paid off. So, you know, stop with that crap. Because I hate the blame game. If my manager came out tomorrow and told fucking lies, so, well, I didn't want those players and blah, 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 blah. Luckily, I'm that guy who's got Dropbox. I save tickets on everything. Do you know what I mean? So when you do deals, people are happy. But my manager's not that guy. You know, just like I wouldn't come out and go, well, you know, it's his fault for that and it's his fault for this. At the end of the day, yes, I've fired managers. A lot of the time, it actually hasn't been results-led. It's been, you know, philosophy-led. It's been club-led. Well, Steve Evans, we've got him coming on. You know, we were sixth when I fired him. It wasn't about our league position. Do you know what I mean? It was just we didn't work anymore. So, you know, he's coming up halfway through the show. I just hate that public blame game. You know, and for me, when a manager goes down that route, he's telling you he can't do the job and he's telling you he wants a check. The fuck off. I think it's a cowardly way out for a lot of managers when they start pulling that crap.
Yeah, it's keep that kind of thing behind closed doors.
100%. Do you think they're going to bounce him?
No. You know, they paid money for him. I think that we're all in on him at the moment. You know, so I think he's got another year.
You think they lose three or four in a row? They're still all in on him?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, my belief is that, you know, and that's not with any, like, insider info or anything, but we paid money for him. You know, we've bounced manager to manager to manager to manager over the last 4 or 5 years, getting us to where we are.
Yeah.
You know, at what point do you stop doing that?
Was he the right fit in hindsight, in your opinion?
That's a great question. I was happy that we had somebody who I felt knew his way out of this division. You know, we're not showing it yet, but then that's where the time thing comes in. You know, our most successful manager of the last 10, 20 years, you know, since we got relegated from the Premier League, really, was Phil Parkinson. And, you know, that was a pretty awful start. I think he had 1 in 21 wins or something like that, that we stuck by him and it all kind of clicked. So, you know, we kind of look back and say, has firing managers every 6 months helped us? No. Is he the right person? I can't answer that yet. I wish that he was a manager that had a little bit more empathy for the fans as well.
Personality, though, isn't it? It's his style.
Yeah.
He's never been any different, by the way.
No. I mean, we knew what we were getting, and I think the gamble was it would pay off immediately. And with it not paying off immediately, it's starting to get ugly.
Well, listen, it's tough. You know, obviously, we'll get Ryan on in a few weeks' time or whatever else. Possible, and we'll you know, who do you want now? Who do you want signed in January? What's going to get the team going?
From a player perspective, honestly, I don't know. from a position, you know, we'd probably need a right back. We need somebody to take a little bit of control in the middle. We're just far too weak in the middle, and we need, whether it's a backup to Andy Cook or somebody to give him a run for his money up front. But when he gets injured, there's nobody. We've no number nines. We've only one number nine. We've got no number tens. So there's just some kind of glaring gaps.
I told everyone in the summer, including Gary Neville, because obviously I speak to Gary and whatever else, and he was one of our players in the summer, sign Louis Reed. And if you look at the statistics, you know, for somebody who's like a quarterback midfielder, you know what I mean, it dictates playing whatever, what he's done for Swindon, you know, he was far too good for League Two.
Mm-hmm.
I was amazed there wasn't a line of League One clubs wanted to sign him.
Right.
You know, he's done amazing and would have been perfect for Bradford, probably on 1,500 quid a week at Swindon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you know, we had players that we let go in the summer. I was astonished. We had Niall Mason, we had Louis Reed, and we had Fraser Blake Tracy, and he went to Burton. I don't know if he's done well or not, but three promotion winners who played a part. There's probably, I'm missing someone else in there. And I always thought, you know, League Two club, we did it years ago. We signed two players from Walsall who got promoted, Dean Keats and Chris Westwood. And I was buying one experience, two, we were buying promotion as regards to they'd been there, seen it and done it, and they were going to be great for the dressing room. And I thought, why didn't anyone in League Two who was ambitious want to sign those three or four of our lads?
Right.
I know Noah Mason's had flack to do with, you know, he got done years ago for something that happened in a bar. And it's, you know, obviously he's been tarred with that brush for life. But he was terrific for us. He was brilliant off the field. And I know he's not getting a chance because of his history and all the stuff that comes up on Google. But if you give second chances, there's a player. You know, so I was just amazed in the summer that people didn't go out and sign three or four of our promotion winning players. That astonished me.
Yeah, and you have Christy Pym went down to Stevenage as well, didn't he, a couple of weeks ago. Now I know we've talked about, you know, him and what happened and kind of his future at the club, but I was actually surprised to see him go down to League Two.
Amazed, the League One club. He's a Golden Gloves winner in League One, a promotion winner with us. Astonished there weren't five, six clubs, you know, who didn't want him. You know, so listen, in the summer they'll have a chance, but if you're a good club who wants a brilliant goalkeeper outside the Championship, even at Bradford, for the next couple of seasons, there's no better goalkeeper that would win you promotion from League Two to League One, and still a good age. So again, I was a bit astonished by that. It's been a really, like I said, a weird window, but we're going to have to take a break because I know we've got Steve Evans coming on now in a couple of minutes. So that'll be exciting. We're going to talk about Gillingham. We're going to talk about history with Bradford. You can ask him about Posh. He can give his two pence worth and his opinion. And I've obviously got someone around his house with a
I'll ask him what it's really like to work with him.
So, and then we'll try and cover off some of the stuff we haven't spoken about today. So back after the break, folks.
Welcome back to the Hard Truth podcast. And we're joined now by special guest Steve Evans, until extremely recently manager of Gillingham. Steve, thank you very much for joining Dara and I on the pod today. Really appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. I've been keen to come on to to Phil and the chairman's podcast for many a moon, as the chairman knows. So I was delighted when he messaged me his empathy last night and said, you know, we'd love to get you on. And that's the type of thing that Darren McCantony does that sometimes people don't say.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Gaff. I had a load of Gillingham fans messaged me last night on Twitter and stuff. And look, I know how football works. So, you know, you're going to be a little bit PC, and that's fine, because you'll have an agreement with Gillingham that you're going to get paid or whatever else till the end of your contract. But obviously I saw the news yesterday. That's, you know, I did message you before a few weeks ago about coming on, but I saw the news last night. Obviously I spoke to Baz and I knew things weren't going to plan there at Gillingham. And, you know, good chance for you to obviously give your side, because I've always said on the podcast, what you did last year was like fucking miracle work, you know, at Gillingham. You know, even with like 10 games to go, you had a chance of even getting in the playoffs. And, you know, I kind of know what your budgets were like at Gillingham.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, that was a real, what you did at Gillingham last year was a real telling of the talent you and Reigns have together to be able to go into a situation with fucking nothing and make things happen. Do you know what I mean? So give us your opinion on, you know, why it's gone wrong, why you're now left there after yesterday, you know, what's happened?
Well, I think ultimately what's happened is results ultimately cost you a job or get you a job, doesn't it? And, you know, we can look at the extreme COVID we've had. I think, Jim, and you've had it. We had it to probably as bad as anyone, extremities, you know, where 7-8 players out. If you take that on top of, we were missing for a crucial 6 or 7 weeks from October through until we stopped playing at the beginning of December because of COVID again. But we were missing Dempsey, Oliver, Tucker, Bennett, Phillips, I could go on, McDonald, who were big players for us. We have scored 18, 19 players, which we've had, top week, three or four from the academy. And then it resulted in us having to play teams around us with three academy kids in and three on the bench. But listen, I'm not wanting to offer excuses. At the end of the day, I wasn't happy. The chairman wasn't happy. We've been speaking the last couple of weeks. And you know from working me, one thing, I am modest at the end of it. You know, sometimes my opinion's misguided. But, I said to him, we need to sit down. And he called me on Sunday and said, let's have that chat. And it was very amicable. We'll see. But it was very amicable in terms of, it's not working, he needs to change direction. When you've not won for that, it's right. So I'm getting nothing but gratitude for managing a good club. And I lived amongst the people in Gillingham, Chairman. I lived amongst them for many months, as you know. And they were great to me. And I've had messages of brilliant support since the news broke. But, you know, there's always two sides. The chairman will say, I had to do something. I don't sit in the cold light of the evening. He didn't have to do something.
No, of course. So I mean, look, I know Scally, and I'm not his biggest fan. He doesn't like me, and we don't get on. And during COVID, he'd said a couple of things to my partner by email I didn't like, because him and my partners have a relationship from way back when. So I've never been a big, since that, I've never been a big fan of his. And, I obviously, Barry's, he tells me, you speak to Baz a lot and he tells me what's going on and whatever else. I mean, you know, what was your budget in League One this year?
Well, I think, I've got agreements. I can't say what it was. I think it's easily to say we'd be nearer the bottom than top by some stretch.
So what was the expectations from Scally? What did he want this year from you?
Well, I think the expectations become chairman, like every other football club chairman, if you finish 10 twice. And we put up at the second season down to one particular game away at Oxford with 2-0 up, 8 minutes to go, and lost 3-2. I think through a player who became nervous, who's a really good player, became nervous and cost us a couple of goals. And we lost 3-2, and of course we came to London Road on the Tuesday afterwards and won 1-0, and road and luck, it has to be said. Road and luck. I don't kid myself, Philip, with you, Fergie, Barry, everybody. But road and luck. But I can remember coming home from Oxford thinking that's probably taking that stretch too far. And I think that season concluded with us missing the playoffs with 7 or 9 points. Believe me, if we'd have beaten Oxford and then I'd got that result at London Road, we would have been in the playoffs. The boys have been sunk after the Oxford result. And going to play against Peterborough is easy for players. Like now in League One, you go to Charlton, Ipswich, Sheffield Wednesday, Portsmouth. Listen, you don't need a motivational manager to motivate teams to play at those places.
Yeah, of course. So you've had that finish. I know you deep down, you'd play it down, but you wanted to be in the playoffs because you're a serial winner. And Steve Evans in the playoffs is a dangerous proposition for any team to play. So, it doesn't happen. You get to the summer and obviously you're now in front of a chairman who's like, fucking hell, Steve, you brought players in on a few hundred quid a week and you've produced this miracle. You know, I need you to do it again. You know, so I'm looking at League One this year. And I'm looking at the clubs in that league and whatever else. I mean, what do you think? What was your expectation? To just stay in the league? Was his expectation top 10 again?
Yeah, I couldn't start the season similar to stay in the league. It doesn't. I mean, I went up to, and I'll come back to it, but I went up into the Championship with Rotherham. Tony Stewart, is a, like you are, a good friend of mine. He wouldn't mind me saying it. Bottom resources, under 5 million budget, whatever it was. And but we stayed up. We stayed up through trying to get value for money, organisation, discipline. We fight till the end of the nick a point or nick three. So my expectation getting into the summer, I met with the chairman very early in the summer. He said, if anything, there'll be less money, probably the same budget. And he tried to help when he could. But I think the difference at Gillingham, and I think in levels, is Paul Scally's on his own. And I have a lot of empathy with that. So I don't think the chairman would mind me say it. He doesn't have the wealth of a Darren McAntony to throw a million. And I've been there, chairman, and I'm probably getting trouble in your podcast, but I've been in meetings where you've said I'll put a million in on Tuesday, Barry. And I'm thinking, I'm driving away thinking, we lad from a council state. I know you are and from Ireland, but I'm driving away. Just for a million quid in. And then backing it up again. Next, Paul Scally didn't have the wealth to do that. You know, he's independently, listen, he can fly to Dubai first class tomorrow, no blink. He's not that scared. But the difference is, doesn't have £1 million sitting there, or £2 million or £3 million. And I think I understood it when I met him in the summer when he said, listen, this frightens me. It frightens him like it did all of us with the size of clubs, the power. I spoke to Paul Cook regularly in the summer. I was looking to take his 13 players. it was laughing. He'd be like saying, Steve, he's like not on a lot of money and it would be like several thousand a week. And you're thinking, not a lot of money. We just don't do it. I think the difficulty the chairman had was saying it's going to be around the same or try and get you a little bit more if I can. And of course, the pandemic didn't go away. If anything, it got worse for clubs. And I had to understand that there wasn't going to be the resources. So there was no point in me going to try and go and, from a Gillingham point of view, going to go and try and sign a Jordan Graham like we did the previous year or retain Conor Ogilvie or sign Carl Dempsey, who you know very well. Yeah. We couldn't in the summer go for those players because there wasn't any funds available to go for those players. So we had to be, we had to shop in a different market. And what brings with that is a lesser ability of a player, however we dress it up. But you try and sign characters. And I think in the main, when Gillingham have a full team out and they're all fit and they're all well, then good results will come.
Yeah. And a couple of weeks ago, I saw you were linked with the Stevenage job, which surprised me. But then again, location-wise and geography, it didn't. I know, you know, you, Sarah, the family, you've spent a lot of time away on the road. You're living in a flat down in Gillingham. You know, it's not nice, you know, and you're the life of a football manager. People don't realise, you know what I mean, what sacrifices you give up.
I think I was the only one that wasn't aware of the Stevenage interest. I've seen it in the media. I had my chairman obviously tell me that the chairman of Stevenage, who I know, I've known like you are, I know you for 20 years, and that Phil Willis had made an approach to give permission to speak to me. Paul Scally couldn't agree, and Paul Scally told me at the end of the day, what they were going to bring to the table, he was going to refuse permission unless it became a contractual situation where they were paying full compensation rights. And in the market, and with COVID, I think it was offers, the chairman did tell me there was offers put forward, but it never got to the stage where I got involved. So I just always seen Stevenage as a fantastic, well-run club. I think me, you and Barry have started having beers in Portugal and spoke about clubs being well-run, and boy, chairman are wealthy but prudent and do it properly. And I've always said that, so I never gave it, and I couldn't allow myself to get any more thoughts on it.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, well, look, you know, Phil's obviously a Bradford fan. We have a lot of Bradford listeners. And I've always, it's almost like I'm your agent. I've always said the one person, you know, who get Bradford to the championship is Steve Evans. You know, I would bet, if I could bet, I'd put 100 grand on whatever odds it would be that Steve Evans in three seasons would have Bradford in the championship with his eyes closed. And he doesn't even need serious backing to do it because they've got 20,000 fans helping their budget every year that go every week. But Phil's told me there's history between you and Bradford and the fans and whatever. So, you know, I'm going to let Phil take this segment, but I still push and say if Bradford job did become available, and I'm not trying to talk Derek Adams out of a job. Very good manager. Let's say in the summer it was available, you know, I would promote and say you got to go get a Steve Evans. So, Phil, you take it from here.
Yeah, you give me the easy questions, right, Derek? You know, it's funny. I think the game against, for folks who aren't, you know, don't know the history of the game, probably, I think it's 2012, wasn't it, Steve? Bradford Crawley. You were going, as Crawley manager, were going for promotion in League Two. And we were just another malaise, you know, trying to fight off relegation, all very frustrated with how things were going. There's a game at Valley Parade, which you came in, and I can't remember the final score. Maybe it's 2-1 or 3-2, something like that, but you beat us. 2-0, yeah, and there was five sent off with a
2-0 or 2-1, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. There was a fight afterwards, after full time, because, you know, I think things were very testy where there were five players sent off after the game, not often a League Two game gets on the BBC News afterwards.
No, I think from memory, Phil, there's a few, Bradford did a few corners, if you remember, near the end, and put a lot of pressure on. And we had a big set off. Jamaican captain at one point, Jamaican international called Claude Davis.
Yes.
And of course, Bradford had a real good competitor. I used to dislike him because he was a real competitor. And I loved him if he played for me. A big boy called Andrew Davis.
Yes. And very tough.
I wasn't aware at any time until well after the game that there was some previous week Claude and Andrew. And, and of course, we've got nominated Marcus for corners. They've got nominated Marcus. And I think a corner near the end, that was the start of it. I think it was a corner almost on time, and the two guys are together, there's a few wobs, and I think then it became a bit mayhem, didn't it, and out of control.
Yeah, it's like full-time whistle, everyone started piling in. I think there was a lot of frustration in there, and you know, fortunately we went and we did stay up that season, but it's one of those games that's, I think, indelibly marked on a lot of Bradford fans' psyche.
I've always seen Bradford, more or less how I've seen Bradford, was really under the Phil Parkinson era, where they were beating the likes of Arsenal and stuff. Like they were fantastic, weren't they? And they were a threat. But I always enjoyed playing against them. You know why? Because if you played against Bradford at home, you're 2,500, 3,000 away fans. Yeah. If you played at Valley Parade, which I love going to Ballybrain because it's one of those iconic, and as Leeds manager, I often went to Ballybrain, and you can imagine the stick I got arriving at Ballybrain.
I can imagine.
But I could not take away from the fact that it was fantastic supporters, fantastic football club. And listen, I'm not talking myself any job here. They've got a friend of mine, Derek Adams, but it's a football club that I like everyone acknowledges. And I think that's why Derek went away from League One with Morecambe.
Yeah.
Back to League Two, very similar to myself. I stepped back from taking Crawley into League One. I stepped back with Rotherham because I believe Rotherham could go to the Championship, and we were fortunate we got there back-to-back. And I think anyone who gets it right for Bradford, it's not just the Championship it can stop at, is it? It could be the Premier League.
They've definitely got the infrastructure, the fan base. I think that's one of the things that's so frustrating. But then you deserve where your position doesn't lie. You know, you are where you deserve to be. So I think it's difficult for teams that come down and difficult for Bradford fans as well, where, you know, you think, well, we're a big, and I use like air quotes, we're a big club, but you are where you deserve to be. And so, you know, that's the challenge.
1,000,000%. I don't think there'll be a manager or a club in League Two who would not look and say, they look for Bradford away. They look for Bradford away. Because you look for games, don't you? You look, you know, when this season at Gillingham or the season with the chairman at Porsche, you look for when you play Sheffield Wednesday, Ipswich, right. Sunderland, Charlton. In League One, you're looking at, you want to play Porsche. We were on the receiving end of that, same with Rotherham in League One. So Bradford in League Two is probably the one, if not one of two clubs that everyone looks and says, can't wait to go to Ballybrain because the lads are playing in front of 2,500, 3,000, 4,000 most weeks, and suddenly they're turning up and they've got 20,000 fans. And we all know if Bradford at the top of the league and the top two or three, there'll be 24,000, 25,000 fans.
Sleeping giant.
Now what's it do for a player? You know, you said that you don't, in League One, you know, you're not needing to motivate the players when you're going to a Hillsborough, a Portman Road, or, you know, some of those bigger grounds. I mean, what's it like in the dressing room when you're going to a Valley Parade or a Hillsborough or whatever, when you're at that level? I mean, you talked about your job's kind of already done from a motivation perspective.
Yeah, I think it never ever counts what your remit is. I think it's exciting to be part of the journey. I think if you take over at Bradford, though, when I went in for the chairman at Peterborough, especially at the start of that season, then you almost paint a vision to your players. 1 point in August, 3 points in August is players might think, well, we'll come back next Tuesday and we'll win it. We'll come back on Saturday and we'll win. But in reality, you know, 3 points or 1 point in August is the same as what it means in March or April. So it's a bit getting people to buy into something. So if you're at Bradford playing in League Two, you're probably challenging your players every week. Every week you have a cup final. You imagine playing for Celtic or Rangers, Liverpool, Manchester City, Chelsea. You know, if they have a draw, they're the lead story in the back of the paper. And but in saying that, if you're a Bradford and you're winning matches, you're the lead story in the back of the Yorkshire paper. Instead of it being a Leeds or Huddersfield, you become the story. But you have to win games to get stories.
Take us inside now. You know what happens. You part ways with Gillingham. You've had a conversation with Scally. You knew it was coming. The minute the chairman says, "Look, we want to have a conversation," things haven't been going well for a couple of weeks. You kind of know it's coming. So you've probably already had conversations with Sarah, your lovely wife. You know, what's the plan now for the next couple of months?
I think going back the last 4 years, Chairman, the conversation generally with Gillingham was two-way. I could see that the one thing I've always done is I think like a chairman, I think like a club, I think like a supporter. And I've been sent to Paul Scally for 2 or 3 weeks now. Maybe the club should go in a different direction. Yeah. And he always resisted that, but we took a battering on Saturday. Combination, we were poor. I picked a team. I'm in charge. I'll take it right on the forehead. Ipswich were very good. They turned up and suddenly they were like the Ipswich I expected in August under Cookie. And Cookie will not get any credit for that, but he deserves enormous credit because he's the one that's put that plan together. And that's not taking nothing away from hearing the new manager, who was brilliant on Saturday, a great chat with him before and afterwards, very humble. But so from our point of view, I had that conversation with the chairman. He called me on Sunday morning or Saturday night to get together. Sunday, we spoke for a couple of hours. And I think by just natural conversation, it became obvious that both of us wanted to go in a different direction. So thereafter was, as you know, from my point of view yourself, thereafter was very easy. I'm not wanting to say pay me this, pay me that. I'm not about that. I'm, let's be fair. You were more than fair, Chairman. So it's, and the same with Paul Scully, I'm sure, or a lot of peer, you'll be fair. And it's just a bit being fair to everyone, putting no burden on Gillingham, because they don't need him to take a penny out there. They don't deserve it, because they need every penny they've got, because they're in this battle.
Yeah, of course. And what are you going to do next?
Well, I'm you know, I have to look at any options that obviously come in. You know, I'll have a week where I'll go and play a little bit of golf and freshen my head up. I'm not, I don't need to go away for 3 or 4 weeks and say I'm fresh. The minute I've not got enthusiasm to do the job, I'd be as well not here. And I know somewhere that there'll be a project that excites me. I don't want a dead end project. I want a project that could be exciting. A project someone says, I need a Darren McKenzie, and that's not because you're here. I need Tony Stewart. I need John Radford. You know, I need someone that says, listen, come, we're going to support you, we're going to back you. Not necessarily big money, but come on, give us some of that magic that you and your staff and the players can bring and have a project. A bit like what the Ipswich managers just had. Really great scoring players. Never worked out for Cookie. I spoke to Cookie several times since he's gone. Feel for him. You know, and when he'll see Ipswich now, I've no doubt climbing that table. I think there'll be a little mix in his head of great, and there'll be a little mix. That should be me. And, you know, I want to see Gillingham rise up the table, and then I want to look at what's going to be there for me. And, you know, if there's something there, then great. I'm lucky in the sense that I don't need to worry about paying the bills at the end of the month. But I'm okay that way. Thanks to you. Thanks to you. Thank you. I'm fortunate in that sense, and we've always been very prudent. We're not silly people, so we don't go and spend lots of money and then forget it all. So we'll try and make a calculated decision, and hopefully in time that will allow me to revisit Priestfield, the home of Gillingham, and applaud the supporters who were fantastic to me. I'll not get that opportunity unless I go back, but I've been back to Porsche and be very humble. And I went back to Rotherham weeks ago, and there was a 3 or 4 minute standing ovation. And even my players were saying afterwards, despite taking a walloping, they were saying, unbelievable. And that's because they knew I gave it my life, as I've done for Gillingham for 2.5 years.
As you go into a new job, like as a new manager, a new club, kind of what do you do to find out the lay of the land, like to figure out, okay, this is kind of where we are. This is where we're going to go. These are the first things I might need to do to turn things around. Like, I'm always interested when a manager goes into a new club, because usually when you do, you know, you're catching a falling knife and you've got to try and turn it around quickly. Like, how do you go and do that? Or how do you set yourself out to go and do that?
I think it's a good point, Phil. I think the first thing you have to have is an education of the squad of who you're getting to manage. Now, if it's Leagues 1 and Leagues 2 and probably certainly half of the championship, if you said to me now, you know, what about this squad, what about that squad, how do they play, what system and shape, what players excite you, what players are probably getting games that perhaps shouldn't get games, that's what all goes through your head. Mm-hmm. And I dismay at managers who say, I've come in here and everyone's got a clean piece of paper, because you play against teams. If we played against the Chairman's team, we played against Peter United on Saturday, or take it back to last season to make it simple. I know roughly what the team's going to be. I know what the shape's going to be. Darren might tweak the system a little bit. But I know what Dembele's going to do. I know what Johnson Clark has. I know what when Sammy Modric turns up and produces his magic. I know what they're going to do. I know what the young centre-half coming through. What a talent he is. But if the chairman got 15 to 20 million for him, he's underselling it. I'm just going to know the same. Posh, if you said to me about Bradford, if you said to me about Doncaster, obviously their league, if you said to me about Fleetwood, if you said to me about Sunderland, then I would know the squad. And you would already have opinions, but what the most important thing is, when you address that group and you say everyone gets a fair opportunity, they get a fair opportunity. They get the fair crack. They could be a different player under you because you motivate them differently, or a good player under someone else might not be a good player under you. So it's really about it's quick assessment, depending how quick the job is. If it's the summer, it's a lot easier because you get pre-season. But if you're in the middle of the season, you need to be able to hit the ground running.
Yeah. I mean, my opinion is that for a club, if you get into March, April, and you're like, you know, you're not going up, you're not going down, that's the time to actually bring in the manager you want in the summer, because he'll get 4 or 5 games just with the current personnel, the players. Maybe some of them have contracts expiring. Maybe there's a couple of younger players from the 23s you might be promoting. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Come on in, find your feet. No matter if you lose the 4 or 5 games, see what you got.
Jim, a real protagonist of that was when I went to Rotherham. We were in the running, 7, 8 games to go at McCrawley. Absolutely nailed on for promotion. Literally, my daughter could have turned up and got them promoted. So we were nailed on. Rotherham made an approach. I went and met him. Tony Shute offered me the job. And 2 things happened very quickly. He said, when could you come? I said, well, I'm not coming straight. I will come the next day after Crawley won promotion. And he wasn't happy with that. But he woke up the next day and he was happy with it because he thought, this is the first guy I've met who's got about loyalty. Because their game is famous for no loyalty, isn't it? There's no morals, there's no standards, there's no loyalty. But I went back down south to Crawley and I met Susan Carter and Paul, the 2 owners, and I said, right, I'm going to go to Rotherham, but I'm going to stay and get York, because I wanted to be honest with them. And if I said anyone who was a pee in the pot, it would be Paul at Crawley and you. Because Paul just said, if you're leaving me, you're going today. So he said, if you're resigning, he said, I've been in here. And I thought, so I rang Tony Shute. He said, go and phone your man. And I rang Tony Shute. So back to your point, he said, Steve, I wanted you here tomorrow. Come tomorrow. Your contract has been set. Sign it next week. I've given you my work. Like when I joined you, with no contract. The award was enough. And he says, come up. You and Paul come up. And so we drove up the motorway. The boy being, rolling 5 or 6, 7 games to go. We're at the Don Valley, which was not great. The old running track around it. But we went there. That was the best decision of all my career. The best decision that I made. I didn't make it, but it was fortunate to land for me when I went. I got the chance to assess the squad. I got the chance to see who was staying. I got the chance to see who was going. We were getting a new stadium. I was part of all that process, part of the planning, part of everything that Tony Shute was thinking through. And it became a project that was magical for 4 years. But that planning of Tony Shute had made the decision, we're not going to get relegated out of League 2 because they were very low. They were about 18th of the table when I went in. And I'll never forget the first night I arrived in Rotherham, we had dinner, and he said, tell me where I'll be 3 years today. And I said, you just have stayed up in the Championship. Be bullish. And he reminded me, we had just 3 years, almost to the week, we just stayed up in the Championship. So an incredible, but that spell to look at the club, to look at the staff, and the staff were wonderful. Paul Warren's doing a great job now. Paul Warren was our fitness coach, wet behind the ears. And he's often says he's let lots of managers, but a lot of time with us. And he's carried that work on that we did all those years ago.
Before you go, let's get down to the brass tacks. Give me one job you'd take in non-league, one job you'd take in League 2, and one job you'd take in League 1, if you could choose any jobs from those 3 leagues.
Oh, wow. Big question. I think if you look at the conference, the oldest ever football league club, Notts County, stands out to everyone in it, but the guy's doing a great job. Fantastic owners. I spoke to him a few times. Fantastic face. Had a running crack with him as well, because I beat them and celebrated in front of their fans. But what a club. They're in conference. And I'll just caveat and say, Southend's near the bottom of the conference. That's a travesty. I've been on many occasions and got beat, and I've been there when I even got as an injury time when Ivan Tony, and we celebrate if we've won the cup. And I remember you calling me on the team coach and said, we'll be so famed, I can't do. you would certainly say Notts County. You look at League 2, and again, it's full of giants, and you could, also if you're picking it from an open map, you would go back, Bradford, you wouldn't pass Bradford, would you? You look an open map, you go 20,000 fans. And if I looked at League 1 now, you look at the Giants. We went to Hillsborough recently and drew 1 each. You know, is there any bigger giant? I turned down that job once when I was at Rotherham. With Milan Mandrick, the chairman, I met him in London. I turned it down. And it was probably one of them at the time. I thought, when you live in Rotherham and you become part of Rotherham, there is a little saying that once a miller, always a miller. And it's ingrained to compete with Sheffield United and Sheffield Wednesday. It doesn't mean you would never go and manage or play for the other club. But and Tony Stewart played a wonderful card where he says, if you have a second chat with Milan Man region, it don't work out for you. I'm sacking you tomorrow. So that's it. So I phoned my agent up and I said, tell Milan I'm not having that second meeting. Well, I'm not coming. And as you know, I see Tony Stewart regularly, and he still laughs at the fact that he's sat in his office and said, if you have the second chat and it don't work out, I'm second, you know. So, and I thought, I can't do it. So, the opportunity to manage Sheffield Wednesday may come in the future and you walk here on glass, but you don't walk from the New York Stadium to one of those rivals. Just the same as I would always believe Cambridge is a good club, Northampton's a good club. If they'd have come for me, and they didn't, if they'd have come for me straight after I come out of Porsche, I wouldn't have gone direct to that. Because, you know, I'm from a family that, you know, all my in-laws are Peter United season ticket holders. You met them, Jim, and you know.
Of course. Well, listen, it's been amazing having you on. And I just want to wish you, Sarah, and the family all the best and get some rest. I'll see you, obviously, in the next few games. I'm sure you're going to pop along and come to a couple of games. Keep yourself busy. Well, I said the bars last night, you know, make sure that you come to a few games, you know what I mean, and keep yourself about. And I know you. I know you'll be back in work within the next couple of months. No fucking doubt about it in my mind.
Thank you for having me on. It does mean a lot. Everyone talks to Anna, people talk to me at podcasts. Not Evans on that. But good luck to you. And how important it is for the city. And I'm a rival manager to Darren Ferguson. Am I allowed to swear?
Of course.
He's a fucking great manager. He's a good manager. Fucking changes tactics 3 or 4 times in a game. You're thinking it's midfield, they've got 1 of them, 4 up front, 3 in the back, or 5 in the back. And I've beat him and he's beat me, but he's a fantastic manager. And I can remember, I didn't take well, I was in a bad place when you bit me. You know that, I was in a real dark place. I'm not in a dark place today, I'm in a dark place. But after a few months, we had a lot of break with the family and I sat with my 2 daughters, said, you know, if there's one manager that I can accept that Darren McCanty would replace me with, was Darren Ferguson. So that's my respect for him. And you know what I think of Barry and yourself and everyone at Porsche. It'll be in my heart. When I'm finished walking, I'll be sitting in that stand moaning at the chairman to spend my time.
Hopefully the new stadium at that point, Darren.
Exactly, Fucking right there. That's what we need.
And Darren, we've spent $4 million this year. That's not enough.
Yeah. All right, Gaff. But listen... I'll be pushing your calls, you know what I mean, with the Bradford fans if that job comes up, and keep yourself busy, and I'll see you soon.
Yeah, listen, good luck to Bradford, by the way. Derek's a good friend. I've known him a long time, and he'll be hotting it where they are, same as I was where we are. And go and win some games, Derek, and then maybe I'll beg into the League 2 company of Valor Parade as an opponent next year.
Absolutely. All right, Gaff, all the best, right? Wishing you well.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Phil.
Was he what you expected, Philip?
You know, I honestly didn't know what to expect, but I think that you always find that the people behind the persona, you know, the football's so much about personas, you know, and a lot of people can see you from the outside and look at the persona of you in the press. Like when you get to know the people behind those, I think it tells a very different story. What's also really interesting to me, you know, as an outsider, is how much, you know, within the game of football, it is a small community, and it's a community of people who generally want each other to do well. And yet on the terraces, it's all about, well, it's a lot about hate, you know, and I hate to use that word, but it's, you know, there's the rivalry and the pressure, and you can't speak to somebody because they've got this affiliation or because they did this 20 years ago. And, you know, supporters have long memories, whereas behind the scenes, it's much more of a smaller kind of community.
I agree with you. The tribalism that exists, you know, within football. And
it's a great word.
And the opposition, you know, tribalism as it would be called. But in our industry, I've always said there's only 72 owners, there's 72 managers, you know, and you know, people probably think I don't talk to ex-managers. You know, like I'm having lunch with Graham Wesley, you know, in a week's time. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I speak to Steve quite a bit. And you know, it didn't end well because he didn't take it well when I, you know, obviously he left. And but he made amends for that. Do you know what I mean? And that's what happens in football, because it's a very small industry. It's very incestuous. And you like to help people who've worked for you. You know, I've helped Jim Gannon get jobs. Do you know what I mean? Graham Wesley get jobs. You know, the gaffer we just spoke to, I'll always put him in, you know, the people for jobs. And because you want to help people in the industry. There's no hate here. You know, the beautiful thing about football is you win, you lose games, you fire managers, you sell players, whatever. These relationships you have for the rest of your life. Like Aaron McLean, my ex-player, has just messaged me there again. You know, you have those relationships for life. Yeah. And I've always said to a manager, I think it was Grant McCann, I said it to you, you know, you're going to hate me for a day when you lose your job. And this is when he first got the job, you know. Mm-hmm. But eventually you'll understand, you know, we can't hate each other. Because that's just the way the industry is, you know. And if you know, life's too short to have hate and resentment. So, Phil, good to be back on. Just to summarize there and go back over, you know, what we're going to do with the pod this year, we're going to try and get more guests on. Next week, we've got Adrian Durham. Really excited about that. Love Aid. I think he's brilliant in the media. Haven't always agreed with him. We fell out for about a year without speaking. So that'll be good for the podcast. There's a guy with so much experience in the media, seen all the changes, good and bad. A posh fan, you know, but one of those people who he has an opinion sometimes that pisses a lot of fans off, and I love to see it, you know, but he does it, you know, because that's the industry he's in. Right. That's why he is such
going to create controversy sometimes.
He does. And he'll say things and you go, oh, fucking hell, incoming, put your hard hat on. So it'll be interesting to hear how he thinks about those things and how he reacts to them. But I have a lot of respect. He's one of the best in his industry. So he's on next. I spoke to Simon Jordan a few weeks ago. So hoping to tie him down as well. Mm-hmm. Elusive as ever, that fucker at times, you know, but we get on great. So I'm hoping to get him on. And any other ideas from people would be great, because we obviously want to get more and more people on segments. But it was great to have Steve on, and hopefully, you know, listen, I'm joking about the Bradford thing, because obviously they've got a manager, but, you know, any club out there, you know, of a Salford, a Bradford, a Wrexham, a Notts County, you know, a club with a project, you know, or someone with a few quid that's going in, he's your man. Because I do. I have a lot of respect for what him and Reigns does. And, you know, hopefully he'll get a rest for a few weeks. But I know what he's like. In about 4 weeks' time, he will be desperate to get back to work. He's like every other football manager, you know?
There'll be every job that comes available from now until the day he takes one in League One and League Two will be top of the betting charts.
He will. But yeah, absolutely. So I think that covers it. Is there anything else to chat about? I mean, obviously we've missed a lot of talking points, but we won't do questions. But anything else that we need to cover in a big way?
No, we've got a lot of things, a lot of questions that came in over the Christmas break, but we'll hold all those over for either next week or the week after, just depending on how long the conversation with Adrian runs, because we got plenty to talk about. But in the meantime, who have you got this week?
We've got Coventry at home on Saturday, and I think they've sold nearly 3,000 tickets, so it'll be a good crowd, it'll be a good atmosphere, very good team. You know, a real template for us to kind of to look up to and aspire to be like, you know, struggled first season, done phenomenal this season. It'd be a corker of a game. You know, don't be surprised with a 5-3 or 5-4 scoreline.
Yeah.
You know, or a 4-3 scoreline, you know, hopefully in our favour.
Well, hopefully you can get some your shooting boots on and that kicks things off.
That's what we got to do, you know. So listen, as long as you're creating, you know, the rest should follow. So we know technically we've got good enough players, you know, and the proof's in the pudding. So the players have to go out and deliver now. Who've Bradford got?
You know, I asked you the question on who you've got without knowing who we've got. So I seem to think it's Rochdale, but I'll say that and then I'll be proven wrong. So
I think they just lost a couple of players today. I think
they did.
Morley's gone to Bolton, and obviously the boy, what's his name? The 25-year-old striker. He's gone to
Blackpool. Blackpool he went to, didn't he?
So they'll obviously, but look, that's how Rochdale have to survive. So, you know, credit to them. That is what it is. And by the way, in this kind of transfer market, they've done well to be getting, you know, six figures, you know, for their players. Mm-hmm. So well done to them.
Yeah. And there's, I forget his name now. There's somebody on Twitter who was telling me, who's a Rochdale fan, about a kid at Darlington, a striker at Darlington, who I can't remember.
I've had our fans like throw him into me.
He was in the market for.
You guys should be getting them. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Listen,
I've got a young striker in our 23s who I think could score 20 goals with his eyes shut in League Two. Kai Corbett, the West Ham boy we signed. And obviously, if we bring players in, the manager towards this month might be looking to loan him out. And, you know, he made his debut for us against Barnsley. And he's an absolute goal scorer. So, you know, tell Ryan to keep an eye out for that one if you're looking for a goal scoring striker.
I'll tell him to give you a shout. Absolutely. I think everyone's looking for a goal scoring striker. But certainly us, because, you know, we've only lost 5 or 6. As hard as this season has seemed, we haven't lost that many. It's just been all draws, not being able to convert draws into wins. You know, that's been the problem.
You need that ingredient in the final third. So are your current players to step up and do it? A bit like what I'm expecting from our players. So, yeah, interesting. Okay, good. Excellent.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we'll be talking to Adrian. So, until then, have a great week.
Yeah, guys.